Tonight on the Daily Debrief, sentencing for the former National Security Advisor to President Trump is delayed. And the attorney for the admitted trigger man in an alleged love triangle murder case defends a sweetheart plea deal.
Well, we solved the case, and a lot of families in this tragic situation have some closure.
Also, another court date for the leader accused of lying about the gymnastics doctor who admitted to a string of sexual assault cases. Plus, a defamation lawsuit accuses the makers of Making a Murderer of dishonest editing. That's tonight on the Daily Debrief for Tuesday, December 18th. And good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Daily Debrief here on the Law and Crime Network. Sentencing has been postponed for a man who was for only 24 days National Security Advisor to President Donald Trump. Michael Flynn admitted that he lied to the FBI about meeting with the ambassador of Russia. He also agreed to cooperate with the Office of Special Counsel Robert Mueller, who, of course, is investigating Russian interference with the 2016 presidential election. Flynn was in court to be sentenced today, but in a surprise move, the judge postponed the proceedings. Law and Crime senior legal editor and former prosecutor Ron Blitzer joins us tonight from the newsroom. Ron, good evening.
Hi, how are you?
Why put off the sentencing this time around?
Well, there are a couple reasons. First of all, after getting basically berated by the judge in court today, Flynn decided that he wanted some more time before sentencing. He had been arguing for no jail time. The special counsel's office was also asking for little to no jail time. But when the judge was coming down as harsh as he did, it looked like maybe the judge would go for a higher sentence. On top of that, they're now pushing sentencing off until after a matter involving one of Flynn's lobbying partners is taken care of.
So a lot going on in this case. The judge, you said, made it clear he was not happy with Flynn in any respect. Why the delay of sentencing in light of that unhappiness, it seemed?
Yeah, so there seemed to be a little bit of confusion in the courtroom today and also in recent days here. Flynn had pleaded guilty. He admitted wrongdoing. But then in his sentencing memo filed by his attorneys, they had tried to put forth an argument that perhaps there was some misconduct on the part of the FBI when they were questioning him. So they were trying to use that as an argument for why there should be a light sentence. But then when the judge was questioning Flynn about that, Flynn said, no, you know, I'm guilty. Everything, you know, was done fine, and he accepts his fate. But the judge was really coming down on Flynn for the nature of his crimes and also seemed to misunderstand some of the timeline regarding some of Flynn's activities. He was accusing Flynn of, you know, selling out his country, essentially, and even floated the idea that maybe he was guilty of treason, even though he soon walked that back. That almost accusation was based on the mistaken belief that Flynn had been working as an agent for Turkey while he was also National Security Advisor. But Flynn's attorneys corrected the judge, pointing out that any activity Flynn engaged on behalf of Turkey was before he took that role.
So hopefully that will all be sorted out before the official sentencing. When that comes down, what kind of sentence are we looking at here? What's possible?
Not a very high sentence. We're looking at max, I think, a few months. But I think with both sides looking for little to no jail time, even with the judge's anger at Flynn's crimes, I'd say probably not more than 30 days.
Okay, we know the president has been monitoring this. How is he reacting?
Well, he's very much been on Flynn's side through all of this. You know, while other people who have cooperated with Robert Mueller's office have drawn Trump's ire, Trump, you know, wished Flynn luck this morning in a tweet. He doesn't seem to be concerned about Flynn's cooperation with Mueller's office, even though that cooperation has been said to be substantial. It looks like a lot of what Flynn had to say to Mueller and his team of prosecutors had to do with matters other than possible Trump collusion with Russia.
Ron Blitzer, senior legal editor, lawandcrime.com. Appreciate you being on the Debrief tonight, and of course, we'll continue to follow your work online.
Thank you.
Now to other legal developments involving men connected to President Donald Trump. Former Trump advisor and longtime Republican operative Roger Stone admitted in federal court documents this week that he spread lies on the website InfoWars about a critic of the Chinese government. The lies attempted to connect the critic to Hillary Clinton and even Steve Bannon. Roger Stone settled that defamation case filed by the critic, but blamed former Trump advisor Sam Nunberg as being the root of the misinformation. Under the settlement, Stone must publish apologies and corrections in major newspapers. Special Counsel Robert Mueller has been investigating Russian interference into the 2016 U.S. presidential election, but a new report suggests the Russians are targeting him. The report claims Russian operatives disparaged Mueller and claimed he and former FBI Director James Comey were corrupt, all in attempts to discredit them. The operatives called Mueller's investigation a so-called weird conspiracy pushed by, quote, liberal crybabies. An organization named New Knowledge authored the report and has provided it to the Senate Intelligence Committee. President Trump's personal charitable foundation has agreed to dissolve under legal supervision after the New York State Attorney General accused the foundation of operating as a so-called personal piggy bank for Trump's children rather than as a legitimate charity. The agreement to dissolve the foundation comes as part of a civil suit which alleged that Ivanka, Donald Trump Jr., and Eric Trump violated campaign finance laws and abused the Trump Foundation's tax-exempt status. As part of the agreement, the Attorney General will be able to monitor where the charity's assets wind up. New reaction tonight to a verdict in a case we followed very closely here on the Law and Crime Network, that of a Florida love triangle which ended in murder. A jury on Friday convicted Denise Williams on three charges that she helped plan the killing of her husband, Mike Williams. Mike had a friend named Brian Winchester. Winchester testified he was the shooter. He married Denise Williams after husband Mike was out of the way. Mike Williams disappeared on a duck hunting trip back in the year 2000, and back then people thought he drowned and was eaten by alligators. Normally, it takes 5 years for Florida authorities to declare a missing person dead. Denise Williams sought that designation after only 6 months. She then collected her husband's life insurance and Social Security valued at more than $2 million. Co-defendant Brian Winchester wrote some of those insurance policies. The key witness at trial, of course, was the admitted trigger man, Brian Winchester, who eventually married Denise Williams. Today on the Law and Crime Network, his attorney defended the so-called sweetheart deal, which allowed Winchester to evade punishment for shooting and killing Mike Williams. First, let's review some of Brian Winchester's description of the shooting.
And he was panicking, and I was panicking, and none of this was like going how I thought it was going to go. And I didn't know what to do. But he started to yell. And I didn't know how to get out of that situation. And so I had my gun in the boat. And so I loaded my gun and I made one or two circles around. And I ended up circling closer towards him. And he was in the water. And as I passed by, I shot him.
Where did you shoot him?
In the head. So when I shot him, it was dark. And there was a bright flash when that happened. And I didn't want to see what happened. So, like, I closed my eyes when the instant of that flash happened.
Attorney who represented that admitted killer said the plea deal came about after Winchester was many years later accused of kidnapping Denise Williams.
Well, it was not easy and it wasn't planned. You have to remember, I was representing him on the kidnapping case, and we were preparing for trial for the kidnapping case. And then some unfortunate evidence was brought to my attention in that case that would have affected his ultimate ability to get a trial and maybe a sentencing. So at that point, in doing this for many years, I've been doing this for 31 years, the state said there was no plea agreement, no plea offer, which even in all cases, you have bad plea offers and you have, but never no plea offers. So the state decided that they wanted information. And so they were playing coy. I played coy. I said, I don't know what you're talking about. And it continued on. And then finally they had come up to us and said, well, if he gives us information about Mike Williams, we might be interested in working out a resolution.
That attorney said the agreement brought some comfort to the victim's family, and that's part of the reason why it went forward. He was careful, though, to characterize the agreement not as an immunity agreement.
I think that's correct. I think there would still, Mike Williams' body would still be missing. No one would have been charged with the crime. There would have been no trial. We wouldn't be talking about it. His mother would be having the anniversary. There'd be an article written in the paper about Mike Williams being missing. But for what Mr. Winchester and the deal that I negotiated on behalf of Mr. Winchester. It's complicated, and I watched the trial. I heard the lawyers say it's immunity. It's not really immunity. He didn't get 20 years for his testimony in this case. We were going to trial on his battery kidnapping case. The trial was coming up. They had some evidence that he may have tried to obstruct justice by getting a witness. This proffer agreement basically said they could not ask for a life sentence. They couldn't introduce anything in front of Judge Hankinson regarding Wade Wilson obstruction, and that they would agree to continue the trial, and that Hankinson would not know about any of this stuff other than that there was a proffer agreement. And then we pled straight up to the court. We pled open to the court, and Denise Williams came in and asked for a life sentence, and the state came in and asked for 45. He scored like 8 years with the 10-year minimum mandatory, and there was 15 years was recommended by the probation department, and Judge Hankinson sentenced him to 20 years.
Those were the inner mathematics, the inner wranglings. The attorney said Brian Winchester told his story originally thinking it was protected by confidentiality privileges. Bottom line, a newly elected prosecutor made it happen.
Knowing that this unsolved murder was out there, knowing that we had a newly elected state attorney who wanted to break this case, the original proffer agreement they sent us was, it was like what we say at Christmas time, you give more than you get. So we made changes. We covered every angle we could cover, everything we could think of, no derivative use. If any portion of the agreement was he deemed to be untruthful, only that portion could be used against him. But basically anything that he gave them, which was including the body, could not be used against him at all. So with those guarantees, we signed and executed the agreement, and he sat down for the proffer agreement with the state.
And that's the final word in the Denise Winchester case. Other news tonight, a police officer is suing a series of people involved in the making and distribution of the Netflix film Making a Murderer. Andrew Colburn claims the filmmakers and Netflix defamed him by accusing him of planting evidence against murder suspect Stephen Avery. The lawsuit filed yesterday accuses the defendants of editing out important answers to questions at trial. It further says in the plaintiff's words, that significant facts known to the defendants were omitted and distorted. Colburn has since retired from law enforcement. Netflix told Law and Crime it had no comment on the lawsuit. Now to Michigan, where the woman who led a university during the Larry Nassar sex abuse case appeared in court today. Luanna Simon faces a series of accusations that she lied to police about her knowledge of investigations into Larry Nassar's conduct. A probable cause conference in her case occurred today. That's basically an intermediate scheduling step between arraignment and a preliminary examination. The examination is where a judge eventually decides if there's enough evidence for prosecutors to move forward with the case. Earlier in the proceeding, the judge notified Simon of the charges she faces.
You did, after being informed by Detective Sergeant William Arndt and Lieutenant Joseph Cavanaugh of the Michigan State Police, that the officers were conducting a criminal investigation, did knowingly and willfully make a statement or statements to the officer that you knew were false or misleading regarding the following material fact or facts relating to the investigation. That you were not aware of the nature of the complaint that generated the 2014 MSU Title IX investigation of Amanda Thomas Show's allegations. And the officer was conducting a criminal investigation for criminal sexual conduct in the first degree. So this charge is a felony, maximum penalty 4 years in prison and or $5,000 fine, commonly known as lying to a peace officer, violent crime investigation.
And that's just one of the charges. Those charges were not a surprise to some observers who listened to testimony like this one during Larry Nassar's sentencing hearing.
The MSUPD handled it beautifully, but MSU officials were a different story. Because the response of Dean William Strample was to send an email to Larry that day and tell him, quote, good luck, I am on your side. And when my video testimony to the Indy Star came out graphically describing the abuse that Larry perpetrated, disclosing horrific details to the world that no one was ever supposed to know, that I had never told anyone, even my own husband, until that point. Dean Strample forwarded that video testimony to the MSU provost, and he mocked it. He called it the cherry on the cake of his day. President Simon and Board of Trustees, is this the right way to handle disclosures of abuse on MSU's campus?
Larry Nassar, a high court in Michigan has agreed to hear an appeal based on the conduct of one of the judges who oversaw his sentencing hearings. Nassar is complaining that Judge Rosemarie Aquilina should not have handled a motion to re-examine her own sentence, which Nassar said was either biased or created the appearance of impropriety. Judge Aquilina sentenced Nassar to between 40 and 175 years in prison and made comments about signing his so-called death warrant. Nassar admitted to sexually assaulting a series of gymnasts, including members of the U.S. Olympics team. He's serving back-to-back state and federal sentences. Still ahead tonight on the Daily Debrief. New documents are out tonight in the case of an Arizona teacher who became infamous after prosecutors accused her of luring a 13-year-old into sex acts. Plus, the mere act of admiring a pet turns to chaos, and it's all caught on video. The details in that case are next on the Daily Debrief. Welcome back, everybody. Jury selection is underway in a case we're planning to bring you on the Law and Crime Network. It's the case of Jeremiah Monell. He's from New Jersey, and he's accused of stabbing his wife to death and then leading police on a manhunt after the stabbing. Victim Tara O'Shea Watson died in December 2016. Jury selection began today, but the trial will not begin until after the holidays. If convicted, Jeremiah Monell faces life without parole. He rejected a 30-year plea deal. Newly released documents reveal some of the evidence Arizona prosecutors are using to accuse a former sixth-grade teacher of luring a student into sexual encounters. Hundreds of police documents show how Brittany Zamora texted the 13-year-old victim on her days off and then enticed him into having sex with her. Zamora also sent the victim nude photos of herself, according to those documents. Zamora faces 10 counts of sexual conduct with a minor, 2 counts of molestation, 2 counts of furnishing sexually explicit material to a minor, and 1 count of public indecency. Her criminal trial is scheduled for early March. For more, you can head to lawandcrime.com. Killer dad Chris Watts' mistress is reportedly hiding out over fears she'll become the most hated woman in America. Watts admitted to killing his wife, children, and unborn child in November. Several tabloids are reporting tonight that his mistress, Nicole Kessinger, is in the witness protection program and will reportedly receive a new name and identity. She's said to be living hundreds of miles away from the Denver area. Kessinger told police she started an affair with Watts about a month before he murdered his wife and children. The Weld County District Attorney's Office there in Colorado has not responded to a request from Law and Crime for comment about the mistress. Now to Anthony Velez for other criminal incidents in the news tonight.
Here are today's top crime stories trending on lawandcrime.com and across the country. A man in Georgia was sentenced to 15 years in prison after taking a plea agreement in connection with the death of his friend, whose body was discovered in a shallow backyard grave. 33-year-old James Bradshaw Clement took an Alford plea in connection with the death of 26-year-old Chase Masner, who disappeared in Kennesaw in 2014. Masner's body was discovered buried under a makeshift concrete slab under the rear deck of Clement's home. Clement denied any involvement in Chase's disappearance, and by taking the Alford plea, Clement did not admit to the crime. Clement was sentenced to 15 years in prison and will be eligible for parole after 8 years. A man in Kansas accused of killing his girlfriend's 3-year-old son, whose body was discovered buried in concrete in her Wichita home, was sentenced to 109.5 years in prison. 41-year-old Stephen Bodine was convicted earlier this year for the murder of his girlfriend's son, Evan Brewer, weeks after his girlfriend, 37-year-old Miranda Miller, was sentenced to 29 years in prison for second-degree murder. Miller testified against Bodine at his trial in exchange for a lower charge, stating Bodine tortured and killed Evan before sealing his body in a concrete structure. Authorities in New York City are looking for a woman who reportedly slashed 2 other women who tried to pet her dog. The incident happened on a bus in the Melrose section of the Bronx, and the suspect was caught on surveillance camera after the alleged assault. Both victims reportedly suffered slash wounds before running to a nearby hospital for medical assistance. The suspect and her small dog remain at large. Those were today's top crime stories. I'm Anthony Velez for the Daily Debrief.
Joining us for the tail end of the show tonight is attorney John Phillips. John, thanks a lot for joining us on the Debrief.
Hey, welcome. Thanks.
Okay, so what do you make of this, the dog slasher? I mean, usually doesn't the dog create his or her own retribution if the dog is unhappy about being approached? What kind of penalties are we looking at? Where does this thing go, assuming that they catch everybody?
I was watching the show, and it took me aghast. Oh, Lord. What state? Was it New York?
Yeah, I mean, what are you talking about here? Transferred battery, something like that? I mean, vicious
something
animal?
Like that.
What do we have? Well, you've got the woman doing the slashing. The animal doesn't even take a chunk out of anybody.
Right. I mean, it's you do definitely have some transferred intent issues. I need to know a little bit more, but I mean, there's enough there for some prison time, some jail time.
Yeah, while we have you here, I want to ask you about the Flynn sentencing being postponed here. What do you make of that? I mean, the judge was clearly upset. Where does this go from here, in your opinion?
So I represent Omarosa, and so we're following this very closely because there's an issue between the two of them related to the campaign and then her time related to an NDA. But I think Mueller and the justice system wants to squeeze out all the information they can before mm-hmm. they start handing down sentences. And we hope they do. You know, there's more to come out.
Yeah, a lot more to come out here. John Phillips, I know you're going to join us again. And we will go through these issues a little bit more then. And that's all the time we have for tonight on The Debrief, folks. Our live trial coverage picks up at 9 o'clock Eastern. Of course, I'll see you here on The Debrief starting from 5 to 5:30. Have a good evening, everyone. See you tomorrow.